All right. We're going to go ahead and get started. People can keep coming as we go, but I like to talk. I've got 60 slides in my presentation that I already know right now there's no way I'm going to get through. So,
are you going to have a website you can download?
I sure will. But basically, a little about myself. I'm Ryan Martin. I am a meteorologist, ag meteorology degree from Purdue. Go Boilers. I am also a commodity trader. I hold Series 3 and Series 30 licenses from FINRA, traded commodities for a good 5 to 6 years, and right now I also buy all the farmer soybeans for the North American largest soybean crush plant, Louis-Dreyfus in Claypool, Indiana. I also am on the air. I do weather, market analysis all across the country on a bunch of different radio stations and online as well. So I wear a lot of hats, and I am able to put all of these things together on a daily basis, weather, farm markets, and because of the radio stuff I do, social media. I follow a lot of different folks on Twitter, on Facebook, so on and so forth. And what really came to me out of this was there's a lot of stuff out there, a lot of stuff. And this is from my friend Max Armstrong. He retweeted this, and I thought this was appropriate since we're here at a convention. It's meeting season. If you need a tip, go to meet people, meet your friends, have fun. Don't go to listen, which is really weird since I'm sitting here talking to you and I'm telling you don't listen. But it's sad, it's funny, and it's true all at the same time. You go out and you hear all sorts of different things. The pictures that were posted with this tweet were actually pictures that were grabbed from, I think, meeting season back in 2006. And one of the topics was large tires on your tractor, yes or no, and what are the markets going to do in 2005, and so on and so forth. And we just continue to roll on down the road, and we end up putting everything together, and we end up with all sorts of things that 10 years ago wouldn't have really mattered. It wouldn't have mattered what my opinion was, what anybody else's opinion was, because you know what, you could ask me, you could ask those other people, you could get that opinion. If you trusted them, great. If you didn't, fine. Down the road you went. Now you're bombarded with all sorts of different things from all angles, and whether you like it or not, it gets into your opinion, your thought process, and then actually guides and directs what you do, at least in some way, shape, or form. And I know this because of some of the things I saw just over the course of this past year. We're going to touch on those a little bit before we go forward. So we suck at navigating this new normal that we find ourselves in. So that means I have to say, end up here and say things that probably shouldn't have to be said. That is, the fact that it's on the internet doesn't mean it's true. We know that, but boy, I tell you what, you see things every day that make you wonder. It doesn't really have to be edgy or entertaining for you to really pay attention to it, does it? But boy, the way we package things on Twitter, on Facebook, and all of the different things would tell you otherwise. Anybody get the Nigerian Prince email? You know, usually you don't get the hot tip on stocks or commodity prices from your email inbox. I get a penny stock market update pretty much every day. It goes straight to the spam folder. I've never acted on one of those. You shouldn't have to. Markets don't care. This is a big one, because when I was trading commodities, I heard this all the time. You know what? The markets don't care what it costs you to grow it. I had somebody that told me 3-4 years ago, you know what? Wheat cannot go below $5. This is when I was in Kansas working. It can't go below $5. Well, why not, Carl? Well, it can't go below $5 because I can't grow it for that much. Great. But the markets don't care. And you know what? You often get what you pay for. If there's free advice that comes through, if there's somebody that's just putting it out there on Twitter for you to rock and roll with, you're going to get what you pay for. Shouldn't have to say these things, but we do. So let's quickly go through a little 2016 recap. We're going to do social media, we're going to do weather, we're going to do markets. I'll get through it as fast as I can because we all pretty much know what happened, but we have to say these things because it's important. Who saw this? Who saw this last year? Quick show of hands, the Seeds of Success video. Corn is going to $7, beans are going to $14. Don't sell anything. We're all going to die. We're not going to grow a darn thing, and off we go. That was it. This was it. Soybeans are going to 14. Corn's going to 7. There's going to be weather calamity everywhere. La Nina, oh, dear God, I was so sick and tired of hearing that word last year. La Nina this, La Nina that. I brought this picture up. This is the opening pane of the video. because I wanted to run through just a couple of things that were here. And let's count the number of these that happened. Okay? So here over here, we've got March and April, El Nino collapses. Well, El Nino had to be huge in order to collapse to start with, so that didn't happen. Here, this is, I thought was interesting, late freeze in early May. I don't recall that happening. As a matter of fact, I recall that I was actually able to get back out on my boat and do some pretty serious fishing in May. Over here, we have all sorts of weather issues. We've got we've got several dry areas that are going to, we got weed pressure that's going to be coming in here. La Nina develops. Oh, and this is a beautiful one. Frigid fall and winter of 2016. Well, fall, by golly, set records not just in the Corn Belt, but all over this country. We'll show you that in a little bit. We didn't get the first freeze where I'm at. I was harvesting tomatoes off of a little bitty volunteer tomato plant in my flower bed until, I believe, just after Halloween. First frost in northern Indiana usually happens somewhere in that October 8th, 9th time frame. So we extended the growing season by a good 4 weeks where I'm at. Other places went farther than that. But this was the rage. It went viral. This was shared time and time again. I got so sick and tired of seeing this thing pop up on my Facebook page as a sponsored ad. It was on YouTube with 20,000 views. Now, I know in the grand scheme of things, that's not a lot. But if that 20,000 views, if 18,950 of them were farmers, it still caused a problem. And here's the key. This is what I want to get to. This should not be something that really played this big of a role, but it did. Farmers held back on normal selling and marketing. I talked with them every day. Bring me your beans. I need your beans. We're paying this much for beans. We're paying a positive basis. Bring me your beans. Well, you know, I think I'm just going to sit back and wait a little bit. Because they're telling me that, you know what, I'm supposed to have a lot of problem in here. So, you know what, I'm just going to wait. Beans, $8.50, $8.75 at the time. I'm just going to go ahead and wait. And even in my case, where I'm buying the physical product, I had farmers routinely passing up large basis captures right up front. There was a period of time, January, February, where Dreyfus, we bumped our basis for beans delivered over a short, quick ship period. We bumped it to 25, 30, 40 cents over. I bought a million beans in the span of about 4 hours. Okay, but there were guys that I called and talked with on that, passed it up. Because of this video that we saw, there was constant talk of weather phenomena that never materialized. That was my friend Facebook. Let's go to my buddy Twitter. Okay, this is very interesting because, and you probably can't see them over here, but you know, I'm trying to. There's my pointer. This over here, this is a bunch of tweets within the first 5 to 6 on this one page. And if you can just kind of make out what I've got here, I've got rain, I've got fire. I have more fire, I have horrible rain totals, all of it, all one right after the other. And if you dig in and look closer, these are happening different places, of course, but actually over in this little yellow box here, this is rain totals. Those were rain totals from like 3 to 4 months prior. So what's going on here? Well, the person that's running this Twitter feed is really looking to try and get some, they're trying to get some views, they're trying to get some stuff going, so we're going to put some things up here that really will catch some people's attention. It's the incredibly contradictory information stream. You can get 5 guys that say 5 different things and they'll all be opposite of each other. Now, it can be wildly entertaining. There are a few guys that I love to watch that if the markets are running really slow, you get the hashtag things more exciting than the grain market, and you know, it can be very entertaining. Almost anybody can do Twitter, and they do. One of my favorites is I saw a tweet one time, somebody put, I'm having a sandwich. Great, it's less than 140 characters, there you go. Twitter is one of these things that is as useful as you make it. And here's what I mean. Here, according to Twitter, right now, South America right now, we're too wet, we're too dry, and we are on fire in South America right now. That's what we've got. And depending on who you believe, your soybean crop is going to be either 95 million tons or it's going to be 106 million tons. You've got Argentina that one day earlier this week, the market jumps 26 cents on Tuesday. Market jumps 26 cents. Why? 9 inches of rain in Argentina. Whoop-de-doo. Where did it fall? Central Santa Fe and into Entre Rios. Do you know how many beans are grown in that area? How much corn is grown in that area? Some. It's bad. But if you're raising... If you're raising in Argentina, let's go with the latest number, which I believe on soybeans, let's just call it 56 million tons of beans in Argentina. Okay, the area that got 9 inches of rain, the area that's underwater, the area that this picture is supposed to do, 150, 200,000 bushels, maybe a few thousand tons. Okay, therein lies the problem. Where are we talking about? Why did the market move 20 cents? There's no way the market should have moved 20 cents on Wednesday, but it did. Now, if you made some money off of it, great, fantastic. Give me some, I'd love it. Results that we see from the Twitter feed, wild reports seen by the right people to explain market moves. That was the thing. Tuesday, when I'm doing my market reports and the beans are up 25 cents or so, what did I say? Because a lot of times when I give my market reports, I could care less about telling you the numbers. If you want the numbers, there are plenty of places you can go. So I like to tell the why rather than what's going on. Okay? So the question is, well, why is the market up 25 cents? Answer, hell if I know. But it came out after the fact. The markets were closed for that day, and somebody's like, well, you know, they got 9 inches of rain in Entre Rios. Okay, great. And the market's like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Beans up 20 cents. It rained. Okay? But it does lead to inflated problems. The 9 inches of rain in Entre Rios, does it have a big issue? No, not in the grand scheme of things, especially when you're talking about a crop like soybeans that's incredibly resilient. Okay? Now, this is my favorite here. Okay, if you watch a Twitter feed on a day of a USDA report, oh, it's just spectacular. You could have every number come out right in line with the average trade guess, and you would be immediately filled with reasons why the market is wrong, and USDA, they missed the boat this time. Now, don't get me wrong. I am not on a yay-rah USDA bandwagon, partially because I've seen how the good-to-excellent crop reports are done at times. They're done by this. Oh, that looks good. Oh, that looks bad. Oh, that looks good over there. Well, 70% good to excellent. We'll mail that in for this week and we'll be off to the next. So, but still, it's funny to watch the USDA reports on Twitter. The market is right, the market is wrong, or it's missing such and such. You can issue whatever you want. This is the reason why the market's really missing it. That's on Twitter all the time. And of course, on Twitter, there's never any perfect weather. As a matter of fact, the weather's never perfect, and in fact, it's amazing that we've survived this long on the planet. Okay? Others, I'm going to lump them all together, daily emails, Instagram, Periscope. Periscope's a great one because as long as you got a camera that records video, you can go live and talk about whatever you want. It's fantastic. But this here behind the Russians guy, and this is just great, everything you can blame on the Russians right now. But back here, this is an interesting story that showed up in my email, and this was why Brazil was going to have horrible problems. Brazil is it's going to starve Brazil. The weather's going to starve Brazil in their ability to grab to create crops. It's going to cripple the domestic poultry industry, increase the price of chicken, all because of a drought that is crippling Brazil right now. If you dig in and look through all the stuff that's in there and you finally find a date as to when something was written, that story was from 4 years ago. And yet it was sent out just now. So what you end up with here, additional general confusion, skepticism, cynicism, and all of that leads me to the wonderful world of weather. Let's take a look at 2016, shall we? Remember, we started the presentation with how bad the weather was going to be, and corn was going to 7 and beans were going to 14. So here's spring. These are just recap maps. Each of these next slides are going to show recap maps of 3 months. Spring, summer, harvest is what I called them. April to June, precipitation, okay? And this is both maps showing the same kind of statistic, but this is where it ranks, just basically painted above average, below, near, whatnot. And this is departure from normal. So, and this is in inches. So the darker green, this is a 10-inch total over here. So 10 inches more than normal and 10 inches below. So you get the idea. Long and short of it is, a good part of the country here in the plains going through the springtime had decent rains, a little bit dry right in through here, but most of the corn belt fine. Honestly, outside of the southeast, most of everybody was doing pretty good for spring. And when you consider the fact that that's when we want to get into the fields as soon as possible and get going, no one really complains too much about a super, you know, well, a dry spring. It allows you to get going. You want it to rain after you plant, you know, just let it go there. So precipitation's not doing too bad. Temperatures, honestly, little bit warm, but again, hey, if we want to get in the field sooner, get the crop in the ground, you want it to be a little bit warm in the spring, that's fine. It can be a little bit warm here. But I think what's really interesting is you go over here and take a look at how we rank. We were near normal for the spring on temperature. Now, as we move into the summer months, June, July, August, here's where we're real greedy. Here's where we'd really like this rain if we had our druthers. Lord, if you please could just send us 0.15 inches of rain every day until we get up to tasting. When we're tasting and trying to fill those kernels, we really could use about 2 to 2,300 hundredths a day. And then after that, if you get toward harvest, I'd really like to dry this down. I'd like to be done shortly after Labor Day, so maybe I can just go. That's what we want. The long and short of it is we had plenty of rain to grow the crops through the Corn Belt right through here, slightly above normal. You know, we were above normal through here. The plains actually had good moisture as well. The only dry areas of the country this summer out in the west, and again, this pesky little dry area down in the southeast. It moved back and forth, but we never really got rid of the dryness in the southeast. We saw our temperatures crank up just a little bit, but you know what? Go back to Twitter. Pretty much every day you're going to see some global warming tweet about how this is the hottest year since the beginning of time. Honestly, this year really wasn't too bad. A little bit warm in the east, but the middle part of the country was near normal through those summer months. We really did not have a weather problem. Now, stop. I know some people did. I know Ohio, nasty time period during the corn filling stage as we were trying to get that crop in the ground and go toward tasseling. I toured the fields through there. I saw it. Okay, there were areas with problems, but let's keep in mind, we're talking nationally here. Nationally, no gloom and doom anywhere. Harvest. We had good precipitation, and this is where we probably kind of can complain a little again. I'm sure right up in here, it really made some guys a little nervous when we're trying to get the crops out of the field, but still, no drought coming in here, no major problems. The biggest problem I heard over parts of Indiana, I was talking with a guy a couple days ago, said, yeah, can you take my soybeans? They're Monsanto beans. Well, I don't care where they're from. Do they got any bad trade in them? No, they're fine. They're seed beans. He was supposed to be growing seed beans. Got just a little bit too much rain here toward the end of the season, made the bean too big, couldn't be used for the seed and whatnot. That's the only complaint I was really hearing, other than I'm trying to drive my combine through fields that are a little muddy. Oh, what just happened? Oh, good. So, driving through fields that are a little bit muddy, but still, we have no real significant issues here as we go forward. Into the temperatures, here's where we started to warm things up. Already talked about the fact that fall was warm. October, one of the warmest years out there. November, one of the warmest years out here in recent history that we've seen. That's going to play into my forecast here in a little bit if I can get through all of them. So we'll talk about that here in just a little bit later. But we saw most of the warmth over the eastern United States. And again, look, we only saw a few areas in this record warmth category, right down through the southeast. And of course, up here where I know that we grow at least 300 bushel corn along the main coastal areas. So most of the United States agriculturally really did not have a bad 2016 on weather. We really didn't. We had some times when we were nervous. We had some things that we wanted to complain about, because let's face it, we all love to complain about our crops in the field at some point in time. That's all you hear about. Go back to when we have raised the best crops. Let's go back to not this past year, but the year before. And this was what was real interesting. Year before, we did have some crops in Indiana that weren't looking the best and complained, but where were the best crops in the nation? They were in Iowa, and they were in Minnesota. Do you know how many people from Iowa or Minnesota I heard say even one word about anything in that time period? Zero. Because when things are good, we don't talk about them very much. We only really want to talk about when things are, oh, so bad. And these crop prices are way too low because there's a lot of bad things going on out there. That's kind of the way that we've had this work over the past couple of years. And that leads us to markets. This is real easy. This was the easiest part of my presentation to put together. Why? I could get on my computer, go pick and take a chart of corn, beans, and wheat for the past year. Boom, here it is. But you know what? If some engineer really got a wild hair, that'd make one hell of a roller coaster ride if we just use these market charts to design our next roller coaster. Because here's corn peaking just as we headed toward Memorial Day, just after, right ahead of the June 30th acreage report and the crop reports to this point. We're peaking out here just shy of 450, and this was December corn. Okay, this is not a continuation chart. This is just the December corn contract through the 2016 year. And then we took this thing apart pretty fast, dropped this down in a hurry. Why? Well, first of all, we planted a lot of corn. Secondly, we planted more than we were supposed to. It was really a lot. Now let's go back to that USDA is wrong tweet.
Yeah.
Then we actually had good weather when we really started to see how far along this crop was coming as we went through the year. And traders got it through their thick head that, look, 450 is not going to work. But why did we go there to begin with? Why did we move from here to here? It was not for any fundamental reason. It was all technicals. It was all fund activity, funds jumping on, deciding to go long, wanting to go long, driving this market up. On a fundamental scale, there was nobody here that was calling for sub-trend line yield back in April or June. Not one person said, hey, we're going to remake under 168. Nobody. Okay? There was no reason for the market to go up. It wanted to. Same thing on soybeans. We had a nice little move from down in that mid to upper eights range down here in early March, all the way up to the November beans, going to, I believe the high was right in there at 1182, 1183. And let me tell you, as somebody that works in the bean business every day, this chart is stupid. And I'm not saying that because I want to buy beans for his life. We all have to work in this business together. So, but I'm saying that from a fundamental standpoint. Because again, nobody in March or April said, well, the U.S. is going to make, our yield's only going to be 44. Nobody said we were going to make 48. That's where we started, 48. And yet the funds decided to get long and drove this sucker up, and we just watched in the rearview mirror. I took calls every day. The calls go like this. When you're in my business, the calls go like this. Okay, hello, Drive Sys Ryan. Yeah, what are you paying for beans? I'm paying X amount. Okay, what do you see the market doing? I don't know. Well, where is this going to stop? That was a question that was a lot in there. Where is this going to stop? I don't know. To me, it should have stopped 50 cents ago. I don't know. I really don't know. But then we get here to the point where we've got the acreage together, we've got good yields, and then down we come in that same time period. And then we've just kind of chopped around in here. Funds are still long. Why haven't we fallen apart with an almost 53 bushels of the acre yield? Why haven't we fallen apart? Fund activity right here. Funds are long for a reason. I don't know what it is, but I don't stand in front of trains. I just get the hell out of the way. Wheat's a similar picture. We're just going down. This would actually probably be the least fun roller coaster because all it does is just go down. At some point, you want to go back up in order to get the ride to be a little bit better. So this one, I'd probably tell the engineers to pick the corn chart if I was going to do something. But, you know, wheat fell into the same category, and we had more wheat this year grown, produced, piled up than we ever have. How many saw the picture of the 4, 5, 6 football field long pile of grain in Yoder, Kansas? It's impressive, isn't it? I know that place where they piled that stuff, and that is an impressive feat to have that much grain. But you know what's more impressive? My sources out there telling me that, yeah, that's great, that's a good pile out there, but we still have wheat from 2014, 2015, under tarps, somewhere on a pile in the ground in Kansas. That's why this chart looks the way it is. We just got too much of it. So, we're going to 2017. How am I doing on time here? What am I got? I'm halfway through. We're going to have to pick it up a notch. Okay, we're going to take a look at the current fundamentals, play a little what-if game on the markets. We're going to do a quick, relatively speaking, weather outlook for 2017. I mean, I couldn't get out of this if I didn't talk weather a little bit. And then we're going to look at how to attack the social media elephant in the room. So 2017, that question that I get asked all the time, I was asked every day before I left to come out here, where do you see the market going? Corn market, bean market. I don't get asked about wheat very much, but, you know, just whatever. Okay, let me tell you first, before we go any farther, this quote is directly from me. If you give me fundamentals and technicals, I'm going to pick fundamentals every single time. I'm a fundamental guy. I like the technicals. I think there's all sorts of little gadgets, systems, indicators, services, guys, gals out there that are looking at the technicals that will say you can make money off of this pattern or that pattern, but it always comes back to supply and demand. Supply and demand. Let me tell you, we've got too much supply We got okay demand, but in the next few weeks, especially if China goes to South America and here, then we don't have the demand we thought we had either. So that's where I am. I'm a fundamentals guy. So you're going to see a lot of figures up here. I will be honest with you, a lot of the figures that you'll see over here, you'll see talks about Allendale. I worked at Allendale for a little while, but that's not why I have most of the stuff up here from them. Most of the reason why I've got Allendale stuff, it's the easiest to get to. They make their information out there. They put their little graphs out so you can see them. Easy peasy. So that's why they're there. If you want to look at some other numbers, by all means, but they're all going to point to basically the same thing here. We've got a supply and demand report that comes out on the 12th. It's going to be a big one. It's going to be a big one. Why? Because it always is. It might say absolutely nothing, and it's going to be a big report because it's going to set the stage for where we go the rest of the year. We're going to have our annual production summary. Expectations are that we're looking over 15 billion bushels again. Allendale is lower than everybody else on what they think this report is going to say because they're reading the FSA acreage, the prevent plans, and all of that stuff and saying acreage is going to drop. I'm not so sure. I'm not in that camp. It doesn't matter. 15.2, 15.1, still a buttload of corn. All right. On the grain stocks overall, we're looking at the quarterly stocks number as of December 1st, probably ending up somewhere in the 12.3 to 12.5 billion bushel range. Soybeans 2.9, almost 3, and wheat doesn't matter. As we move into the ending stocks, here's what we're going to be looking at on corn, maybe a slight revision down, a slight revision on beans. That's what most of the trade guess is looking at. As a matter of fact, I wanted to bring this. I was hoping to have the latest Reuters numbers before I put this together. I didn't have them, but luckily I did get an email just earlier this morning that has them. The average trade guess on corn production, 15.196 billion bushels on a yield of 175.1. That would be down slightly on the yield from last month's estimate. On the soybean side, looking at production 4.374, yield 52.7, which would be up half a bushel from last month's, or I should say the November number on soybean yield. Harvested acres aren't going to be changing that much. My thought here is on the soybeans, you know what, let's go for broke, throw the 52.7 out the window. I think we could see a 53. Don't ask me why. I just think we might see it. But either way, those are the numbers. That's what we're going to be looking at. That is going to take these world numbers, and those are going to be inflated, okay? Those are likely going to be going up just a little bit as well on the world carryouts. The only one that you got to look a little close at is going to be soybeans. Domestic crush is doing very well. Chinese crush is doing very well. We'll get to that in just a little bit. So the thing that I'm looking at on the Thursday report, corn yield increase, eh. Soybean yield increase, yes. Bump in exports, watch it. Corn, I don't know. Beans, before anybody gets way too much on this, hey, we're going to have to raise the soybean exports number a little bit. What happened this past week? What happened on the report on Friday? Cancellations of almost 900,000 tons of beans. Unknown destinations canceled them. You know unknown is China. That's just what it is. We're above pace. We're ahead of pace on our soybean exports. But you know what? Put me in the camp of until we cross that threshold, the 20.05 billion bushels, whatever it is, export number. Until we cross that, I'm not going to be in the camp to raise exports yet. So watch that. Domestic crush. Watch this very closely as well. Here's a story you may not know. We're crushing beans and doing real, real good on the soybean side, right? What's happening to the domestic soybean meal basis? Crumbling. Going through the floor. If you're raising livestock and you haven't bought your soybean meal yet for feed purposes, good for you, because we're going down. Western meal trading at 40 to 45 under. That's the basis on Western soybean meal. In the East, we had some trades this past week, 20 to 21 under. Am I saying it's going further or it's going to stay there? I'm not saying that at all. I'm not giving you any, this is not, don't go out and do anything on the futures because I said so. I don't want that on my head. But I'm saying we've got some issues on crush that tells me the domestic crush number may not need to be expanded. It may be fine right where it is. That's something I'm watching in the report. And then, are there any surprises? This is a great one. People always ask me, Ryan, do you see any surprises on the report? Well, wouldn't that make it not a surprise? I'm just saying. All right. So, running through the exports for 16-17, here's the weekly corn export sales. This is a few weeks old, but we've done nothing but really kind of whittle these down over the holidays and into early parts of the year. The number from early this week, 434,000 tons. Okay, not spectacular, not great. Soybean export commitments, look where we are. We are way ahead of the five-year average. We're way ahead of last year. And this is what everybody is saying. Look, we got to raise this export number. Yeah, maybe. Until we cross this line right here, I'm not going to be in that camp. Because you know what? What happens if we come in next week and there was 700,000 tons of cancellations? And the week after, it's 500. And then, oops, maybe there's a million tons of cancellations. Why do I say that? Because combines are rolling in South America right now. Yields in Mato Grosso, early soybean yields, normally 40, 45 bushels the acre, are running 60 to 65. The combines are starting to run. They started to run 3 weeks ahead of normal. And you know USDA sees this, because, and I'll show you why here in just a little bit, but the beans in South America are coming. The only thing holding them back down there is their infrastructure. That's been the same old song and dance for the past 4 to 5 years. You got to just figure their infrastructure is a tweak better this year than last year. So I'm not really ready to jump there. Here's the domestic usage on the soybean crush. We have arced it down. We're coming down a little bit. These are USDA numbers. This isn't the holy NOPA crush numbers. But still, we're crushing pretty good. But you know what? This trend doesn't make me get all wild and crazy and say, let's bump the crush number. I think as we went through the December and January period, we kind of ratcheted this down into the 160, 164 range on crush. Ethanol production, new record this past week, 1.043 million barrels per day. Jeez, that's a lot of ethanol. But this tells me that we're seeing a good usage here. But you know what? When you factor in the increases that we've made in usage or in how many gallons of ethanol we can get out of how many bushels of beans, we're right on track for USDA's corn usage for ethanol. Forget the numbers. We're right on track for what the corn usage for ethanol is. So I'm not going to be looking to see huge increases here as well. But we're using. We're doing pretty good. South America. Here's what we've got in South America. Weather concerns through early this year are limited to very, very, very small areas. Very small. I'm talking 5% of Brazil and Argentina. So all of the stuff that you're hearing about how bad it is in South America, how bad it is in Argentina, that cow had to swim 3 miles to get the fresh grass to eat, 5 to 10%. In Argentina, it's just north of Buenos Aires. And here's what's funny. Here's what's funny. In Argentina, we've had complaints about it being too wet to plant, and immediately after that, it was too dry. Send us some rain. We send you rain, and then you complain it's too wet again. That's the way it's gone in Argentina. But those dry areas to start with that went dry after being too wet were down in the south. La Pampa, up into southern Cordoba, southwest areas of Buenos Aires province. That's the same basic thing as South Dakota, North Dakota, southern Manitoba, western Minnesota, if you want to put it geographically speaking to the United States, weather patterns, so on and so forth. So if you're a little bit late getting it planted, it doesn't matter. You weren't ready to plant early when it was too wet anyway. So we're going to have to wait and see how this goes. To me, the rain here recently in that Santa Fe, Entre Rios area is more of a concern than anything early on in the year, but still, small. Brazil, not even close to that. We're talking about the northeastern part, northern Minas Gerais, Bahia, maybe a little bit in the northeastern parts of Goiás. By far not the biggest crop-producing areas. Yes, they produce some, but if you want to look at it on the grand scale of things, these are going to be small hits to production, small enough that, you know what, we always say here, well, if Indiana has a bad year, as long as Iowa's doing fine, it's okay. Iowa's good stuff can more than make up for Indiana's bad stuff. Same token, Iowa has a bad year. As long as we're okay in Illinois, Minnesota, Indiana, that'll more than make up for Iowa. We say that all the time. It's the same basic scenario down in South America, and they're fine. Here we go. Harvest in Mato Grosso started 2 to 3 weeks early. How do we know that the USDA knows this? Because we are seeing bigger second crop corn acreage numbers. And because of that, we saw USDA raise Brazil's corn a number from 83.5 million tons in November to 86 million tons in December, a 3 million ton increase in corn. Why? Beans were planted earlier. They got done sooner. They're harvesting them. That second crop corn is going in, higher production numbers. Even USDA, even though they didn't say anything, is on board with something like this by seeing that corn number jump when none of these other numbers jumped in December versus November. I just saw the new numbers that came in here as we, the same place that I got the domestic numbers, looking for a slight bump in Brazil production. I think the number I saw had Brazil going back to 102.4, the average trade guess on Brazil, having Argentina numbers slip just a little bit. I want to say 56.6 on soy, corn maybe 35 and a half, well, maybe 30, I forget the corn number, but it's tweaked down a little bit. Brazil corn being left pretty much alone in that 86.5 range. Those are the numbers for the expectations for the report on Thursday. So that's what we've got in South America. Anybody look at this and say, oh dear heavens, we better hold on to some grain because these markets are just going to explode because we've got problems in South America. Anybody see that? Good, because I was going to have a talk with you after class if you did. As for the rest of the world, here's the Chinese corn situation. These two lines right here, production, consumption, they're crossing. But well, the key here, takeaway is consumption is now back on top of production in China, so they might have to import some more. Do you think they'll come here? Maybe not at our current prices. Argentina will beat us on corn to China every single time. Every time. Just like Argentina will beat us on wheat. Chinese imports, yep, they're climbing. They're climbing. We're going to continue to see the Chinese imports climb. A lot of Chinamen over there got to eat. So we've got a lot of product that's going to be going over there. The question is, can they keep up with our world supply on soybeans and corn for that matter? We've got a lot of it out there. My thought is it's going to be a little bit difficult. And here's the other part of it. China's soybean processing margins are fantastic. That's why they're continuing to buy soybeans. Over the past few months, they've just continued to buy. That's why we're ahead of pace. They're buying because their crush margins are great. They're fantastic. What happens when those Chinese crush margins go back down into this area right here? Think they're going to be buying quite as much? I don't, but that's just me. South American soybean production continues to rise. We all know that. India needs some wheat. They took off their wheat import tax. They'll be buying more wheat. Who cares? We've got a ton of it. Black Sea and Russia areas looking great. 83% good to excellent. They've got good snow covered. Don't believe what you hear out there. They're fine. They've got snow. They're fine. And let me clue you in a little bit on wheat. I say this on my radio programs. It feels like about twice a week. Look, if wheat can't handle normal winter cold, why are you planting it? I mean, that's the thing. We had the wheat market spike because it got cold in the plains last week. Whoopee. 1 to 9 degrees coming up in Ukraine here this weekend. Oh, we got to be a little concerned about that wheat. First of all, it's a weed. It'll grow. Secondly, if it's that tender, and that, then why are we planting it as a food crop? Okay, we're getting the market to overreact just a little bit. There's good snow cover over there in the Black Sea. Europe is warm. Ample moisture so far. We're getting rain in South America. No news is good news on China's front. You haven't heard anything complain about Chinese weather or crop production problems over there. So they're going to steamroll it right along just fine. And Australian wheat production quietly rose to the best crop that they've seen in about 3-4 years. So let's play quickly a little bit of an acreage game here. Try and get through this. Oh, geez, 7 minutes. I'm in trouble. Going forward, we're hearing already anecdotal evidence that there are some acres switching from corn to beans in the Corn Belt. Now, this is not rotational farmers. Guys that I know that are planting rotation, they're going to plant rotation, 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 rotation. You do it for a reason, you're going to keep doing it. But where I'm hearing is from guys that do corn on corn, continual corn, maybe don't have the rotational games, new ground that's being broke, stuff that's coming out of CRP. Not going to corn, it's going to beans. Okay? Can we really see a huge swing from corn to beans? I think so. But I think that these numbers right here, which are the USDA baseline numbers, are probably not right. The private numbers that we're hearing here on soybeans at 8.46, what the USDA put out, those are woefully inept. It could be closer to 87.5, 88 million acres on soybeans is what we're hearing and what I would agree with right now. Corn, that 90 million number might be all right. I'd be concerned that it's closer to 88. The wheat number, I think that's right, down 1.7 million acres. With the amount of wheat that we have out there, wheat will lose acres. But I'm thinking the wheat acres might get lost to cotton rather than soybeans or any other kind of row crop. We'll have to see. So keep in mind the effect of the yield, though. If you drop your corn acres 4.5 million, but you only drop your yield one bushel, whoopee, you lost 4.5 million bushels. So what? So you got to look to put this together. If we do another year of 175 bushels of the acre national yield on corn, it doesn't matter whether we drop 10 million acres. But the key is going to be the yield. And I think that this is going to be a year that we're going to ease our way back, probably not the trend line, but we're going to be nowhere near the records that we've seen the past 2 years. 2017 weather, and please come talk to me afterwards because there's no way I get through all of this in 5 minutes. And the reason why is because I've developed my own forecast model. Crop seasonal forecast model, I use this to put out 3 to 6 month forecast windows for the crop season. Let me tell you right now, disclaimer, I don't like to run this in January using December data. Why?
It's probably wrong.
But it has a great track record if you wait and use the February data. If you get through the winter, you use February and even March data, run this thing in March into early April, I have a great track record of being able to put out numbers that make sense. But they're not the numbers that are all dressed up nice and pretty for you on a nice little map that you can go, oh, look at that, Indiana's red. What I do is I put out spaghetti diagrams. And before you think too much about it, no, these are not years. Everybody thinks these are years. Oh, well, which one is this? These are not years. What I do is I put in a whole host of data, put in what's going on also with kind of the tropical cycles, with ENSO, with the La Nina, El Nino, all these different things, and I get ideas of where things are going to be with regard to normal. So on every little graph here, and we'll have to go through them quick, watch for the 0% line, okay? That's normal. Zero is normal. And so what we're looking at is percent above normal or below on precipitation and temperatures. Precipitation is fairly easily, and you're going to be looking at this and you're like, what kind of forecast is this? Take a look. As you run through these spaghettis, though, look at the points. Each of these is a month. Okay, you can get a trend if you're looking at the number of points, because each of these lines is a different model iteration. And if I'm looking at scientifically the number of points here, I'm looking at January below normal precipitation. I've got 3 of 4 points below normal in February with 1 near normal. Looks like March could go either way, but as I'm looking at April here, I'm looking at normal to below. May, normal to slightly above. Then June, we're going to be getting some rain, but then look out in July, normal to below, so on and so forth, okay? So when I put these on a website that so you can download these and take a look at them, that's what you're looking at. Running through this real quick, if we want to run through Iowa, looking at probably a little bit drier than we would like to see for most of this upcoming crop year. Good news is we're going to be seeing a little bit of moisture in March. It could lead to a good soil setup for when you do plant going forward, but then maybe a little bit drier. Temperatures, we're going to be seeing probably close to normal, but I think you've got to skew this normal to above normal in Iowa on temperatures through this upcoming year. Illinois, I'm looking at a very big concern about some drier than normal conditions as you go through the crop year, May, June, and July. Now, well, I'm also of the opinion that you can raise a very good crop. You can raise trendline yield on 75% of normal rainfall. So you got to take that first 25% of rain, lop it off. You give me 3/4 of what I'm supposed to get, I'm going to raise a darn good crop. Okay, but still, you got to look at where these points are sitting between 0 and 50%. We're going to be looking at a lot of complaints probably coming out of Illinois as we go through this year. Temperatures, again, skewing normal to a little bit above normal. Minnesota, garden spot the last few years, we're probably going to do all right. Normal to slightly above normal precipitation in Minnesota through 2017. Temperature-wise right now, looking at near normal, maybe even a bit below. So we're looking at probably pretty good in weather again for the third, maybe even fourth straight year, but at least the third straight year in Minnesota. Southeast Michigan, you get down into a large soybean growing area here, we're going to be looking at temperatures that are going to be near to slightly above normal, but I'm very concerned about the spring planting season with below normal precipitation there. And then we're going to kind of keep that dryness skewing on through as we go through the rest of the mid-summer. Ohio looks to be nearly normal on precipitation, normal to slightly below on temperatures. That one I'm not so sure about. I question my own model at times, but we'll have to see. Missouri, same kind of setup here. We're looking at temperatures probably skewing slightly above normal, better chances above than below. Precipitation looks like as we go forward here, we're probably going to be seeing a slightly dry push here. Nebraska, near normal, probably enough to get by. Temperatures, though, are going to be right at normal as well. South Dakota, I'm looking at a dry summer after a fairly ample moisture profile to start the year. Probably looking at a normal to slightly drier summer. And temperatures, now we'll call them slightly cooler than normal. North Dakota, here's where we're at. We're looking at a dry period in North Dakota all the way through. That doesn't surprise me after the good rains that we saw last year. You would figure North Dakota is going to pull back a bit, but nearly normal temperatures. West Central Kansas, where you could pour out a cup of water and that would be their rainfall for about 2/3 of the year. Looks like we've got moisture all over the place, but then again, keep in mind where the zero line is, and all of a sudden you can see a drought situation that is in Kansas right now doesn't show signs of easing anytime soon, and temperatures in Kansas are going to be warm. Oklahoma, looking at warm temperatures, but plenty of moisture in Oklahoma this year. Look at that. We've got a good spike in May, and I think we're going to be able to keep most of Oklahoma in some good moisture through the upcoming year. Texas, though, probably no better than normal on precipitation, and temperatures are going to be warm. Mississippi, getting down into that southeast area. Right now, Mississippi looks like it's definitely going to be warm, but I think we see the drought that is currently in the southeast not expanding west. If anything, it's going to hug the eastern part of the deep south just a little bit. And that takes us to Georgia, which, taking this over here, I never said my model is perfect. I look at this, and I'm going to say, I don't know. We'll try running it again in 3 months, and we'll come up with something there. But temperatures do look like they are going to be normal to maybe just a little bit below normal in southwest Georgia. Got all that? Know what's going to happen for the summer?
Happened in Indiana.
Indiana?
Yeah.
I did another presentation at the Indianapolis Farm Show, and Indiana's data is in that presentation and didn't make it into this one. Indiana looks like a slightly wet spring followed by an okay summer. I can do them everywhere. I can do them for anywhere for the purpose of this. I only ran the model in these areas right now. Talk to me afterwards. I'll get you and I can set you. I set up and find out where you're at, and I'll run something and send it to you. My model works nationwide. But when you come into a group like this, if I had to run it in all 50 states, I probably would have not made the plane to get here. So. And my time is up, but as we go through here, we'll just kind of rush through. What do I say take away? On social media, we've seen no sensationalism so far. Talk of the polar vortex, talk of the warmest of all time and all this stuff, but nobody's put something out there that makes me feel like I'm going to have to battle for bushels from guys this year. I'm not facing any of that on social media yet, but it is January the 9th, 8th, damn it. So we have some ways to go here. So what do you take away from this? As you go into this, I'm telling people, look at it this way. When it comes to risk management, all these things are available on social media. You got all these gimmicks, but you know what? Do it yourself. Take an active role. There are tons of people out there that just want to hand this off. They don't feel right. They don't know what to do with marketing. They don't know when to sell, so they just hand everything off to some service that will tell them what to do. Or some service that, you know what, we'll market it for you. Keep an active role in it yourself. Everyone has an opinion, but you want to own the one that's going to make your butt profitable or not, okay? May I just recommend, and before the collective gasp comes, use some kind of paper in addition to your physical commodity. Whether it's options, whether it's OTCs, whether it's something, use that. Those tools are there for a reason. But by the same time, if you're going to use paper, for all things sacred, do not speculate. I had a customer years ago, made $1 million in the silver market. 3 weeks later, lost 70% of it because he's speculating. If you're going to use the paper to help your physical, the physical quantity that you have, do not speculate, please. And there are weather risk management tools out there, not weather insurance. Weather insurance sucks. It's designed to take your money. But there are derivative-based products. I've designed one of them that you can actually take weather out of the equation and mitigate it using exchange-traded ideas. So look at weather risk management options. At least look at them. Talk to me about it if you want to, but at least look. And then talk to your neighbors. Not just the standard coffee shop talk, and I've sat in on a lot of those. I know what goes on there. But talk. It's estimated that only 10 to 20 of producers today use any kind of marketing beyond taking the truck across the scales at the co-op and handing it off to them. Yep.
Talk a little bit about all the commodity insurances. I mean, what do you think? Do you think people shouldn't?
Commodity insurances?
Yeah.
Like crop insurance?
Yeah, but I mean, there's livestock insurance.
Yeah. You don't want me to talk about that right now.
I do.
Well, let's put it this way. I have opinions on those things. There you go. Let's talk afterwards. Because I think there's a place for all of them. And you know what? Actually, the best marketing plans put together all of it. Put together crop insurance, puts together use of paper, puts the use of all these things together and not use any single one of them as a marketing plan. And I think that's where we've got into a problem. So I'll just stop here and go with that. Where we run into problem on the commodity insurances is using those as your marketing plan. I.e., well, what's the spring crop price as? Well, I'm guaranteed $4.32 for my corn. Boom, marketing plan. No, no. And that's where we are. And that guys did the same thing with weather insurance. The guys have done the same thing with livestock insurance. They're all good tools, but they are just that, tools. And at the end of the day, if you know the ideas behind insurance and why these products are given, you run the math. It's an actuarial table. They are designed. The insurance company is going to get its money. The insurance company is going to get its money. You may get paid, but we the years of us being able to collect on our hedges and collect on our crop insurance and sell at the high and to be able to do all of these things that all of us want, they're not there. Hedges are hedges for a reason. You put on puts. If you use paper, you buy puts in the hopes that you spent that 20 cents to buy that put, you hope that it doesn't pay you. That's what you hope. But guys, don't look at it that way. So I'm not saying insurance sucks and throw it out, but I am not a big proponent of just insurance. Okay, I guess that's the easiest way to get it around so I don't tick off any crop insurance agents that may be in the room. But the biggest thing that I will say, and this is where it all boils down to, is seriously, ask questions. If you get weather data from somebody, if you get a weather product from somebody, ask questions. Call that meteorologist up and ask him what's going on. Because if you're just getting information and you're just running with it, you never ask any questions, what good is it? I've got a client that I groan every time the phone rings. I see it. It's like, oh, Steve's calling. Why do I groan? Because I know I'm going to lose 20 to 30 minutes with him. Because he asks questions. Sometimes he asks the same question over and over and over again. Like I'm going to change my mind what I said just 5 minutes ago. But I love him to death. Why? Because he's taking an active role in what he's doing. Ask questions. Ask questions. If it's not me, if you don't want my weather information, that's fine. Whoever you use, ask questions. If they're too busy to take your call, your marketing guy too busy to take your call, any of your guys, then they're not worth doing business with. And be prepared to pay a little money for it because the workman is worthy of his hire. I'm done. I went over. Get out. Come talk to me later if you got questions. We'll talk to you later. Weather website is weatherstud.com. Here's my data. Here's where you can find me. In person, online, on the air, Facebook, Twitter, weatherstud.com. And I will put this presentation up on weatherstud.com that you can actually download it, at least the PowerPoint.
I've got...